Welcome to Strike Up the Band
and Orchestra,
Motivating Student Musicians. This podcast is a series of discussions about motivation in the instrumental music program. The participants are Luke Jones, Matt McKeever, and Jennifer Mishra. The podcasts were recorded on the University of Missouri, St. Louis campus.
In this podcast, we resume our conversation with musician and educator and author of the Music Parents Guide, Tony Mazzocchi.
We've covered, in the course of our class, we've covered a lot of different factors that can play into motivation for students. We've talked about peer pressure, we've talked about the teacher, we've talked about repertoire. Do you feel that getting the parents involved and having them understand is the single biggest motivator for students? Or is there something that's just as important?
Well, there's something just as important. I think that you know, while I focus on parents, I mean, you know, let's be really clear. I think everybody plays just a vital role, and no one gets a free pass. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that for just as many parents who are, you know, the first word that comes to mind is clueless, but it's really uninformed. you know, there are teachers who you know, need to do better, and there are administrators who need to do better. I mean, it takes a village, and we all need to be on the same page. I think the biggest motivator for students is performance. I think that I think that because of, well, whatever, we can come up with a million reasons why teachers don't have enough time to create performances for students. But students see an instrument for the first time, right? I mean, these 100-year-old instruments, and they still want to play them. You know, in this digital world we live in, they want to play them. And not only do they want to play them, they want to be good.
Yeah.
And if we have a winter concert and a spring concert with practice and practice and practice over, that's not going to do it. Kids are going to get bored. They're going to get frustrated. And that's not why they're playing. They want to perform. So teachers really need to get up on that podium or in their classroom and say, hey, guys, 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to have our first performance. I don't care if you play the first page of the method book for the parents mm-hmm. who come into the classroom. You know, when you see the kids, their faces after their first performance and people are clapping, they are sold. That is a transformative moment. And to only have two of those in a full year of instruction is a disservice. So I really believe that performance is the biggest motivator. And from there, you bring the parents in, because that's a transformative moment for the parents as well. I mean, they hear them making these sounds that sound like dying animals in their home. You know? Yeah. But then they come to the concert and they see the ensemble experience and they see everything, and it changes them too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there need to be more performance opportunities. And like I said, it can be during the class. You know, teachers need to be creative in how they do that. And that is a, so anyway, I would say that is the biggest thing.
Great, thank you.
Well, we've actually talked about that with repertoire. Do you think, like, repertoire plays a huge part in that performance then? Like, can you pick a piece that kind of has tools to or elements to make the kids still grow, but still at the same time is something that really gets them motivated? Can the repertoire be the thing that motivates them?
Well, you know, absolutely, right? I mean, yeah. Repertoire is a huge deal. But I think, as you said, and it's extremely important, especially when, you know, we want to do a few things as teachers of beginner instrumentalists, is we want to teach them soundly. Mm-hmm. We want to set up some fantastic, you know, habits and, you know, all the way from their posture, the way they hold their instruments, some fundamentals so that they don't hit a wall later. There are too many teachers who are so dead set on teaching to the concert, and that's just like teaching to a test, right? It really is. Mm-hmm. We're doing a disservice. So there's a way for a good educator to sell, like I said, the second page of the method book. You know, you have half notes and everything, but if you can create a decent concert out of that and sell the kids on that, that's fine. And then when you do choose the repertoire, I think, as you mentioned, you choose repertoire that does not get in the way of your teaching. Mm-hmm. You don't abandon all those important fundamentals. You pick repertoire that you know, reinforces all those fundamentals you're teaching that are age appropriate, while at the same time as engaging the students. Mm-hmm. And, you know, repertoire, I don't know, I've never created a graph, but, you know, look, I've supervised some fantastic educators that could get kids to play anything because those kids just absolutely adore the teacher. And then there are other teachers that need to use repertoire a little more to their advantage because they may be in need of a lot more growth as far as their, you know, rapport with the students. Mm-hmm. And that repertoire is a tool for them to do that. But they need to be reflective enough to know that about themselves so that they can slowly transition themselves and, you know, there's a lot of self-reflection involved in great teaching, as we know. And so it's not a black and white, you know, answer I can always give.
Just so you're aware, we just have a big storm coming through here to St. Louis. So if we lose you, that might be the reason.
Wow.
So yeah, it just started crashing down on us. We've talked a lot about intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. And it's the intrinsic is a bit elusive. What we can do, on one hand, can we do anything as directors to help? Is it only with the child developing it? Or is there something we can do to set up the more likely event that the students will be intrinsically motivated? Are there things that we as directors can do to help the students be intrinsically motivated?
It's a great question. The way I feel about it is this. You know, students are going to be motivated more when they achieve success. And playing a musical instrument, when we're just talking about that, or actually doing anything, it's not immediate gratification all the time, but it can be in certain ways. And certainly in the beginning years, you know, the growth is huge if, you know, there's some kind of regular practice. So what I don't feel educators do enough of is what I call, and maybe you call it too, giving ownership over the learning to the student. And then what I'm talking about is giving ownership over that to the parents as well, of being a part of that. So what does that mean? It means that even if you're teaching, because I taught a class of 100 kids at the same time. We didn't have small group lessons. It was like just from scratch. So what you're doing is, and it doesn't happen in one session or five sessions, this is a constant thing. You are teaching students why they should practice, how they should practice, where they should practice, what they should practice, and really in a very, and you need to model this in your rehearsals, taking small chunks, working them slow, making sure that, you know, every student achieves some sort of success, not just running it from beginning to end. Because I can't tell you, if I had a dime for every time I heard an educator, oh, yeah, now go home and practice this. And
right.
The kid goes home and makes sounds, and they're in the room making sounds. The parent thinks they're practicing. You know, really, how to practice and how to successfully get better in a small session. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. I didn't even learn how to do this until, again, I was in college, really how to practice. And when you learn how to practice and you have ownership over that learning, then a teacher can hold the student accountable, you know, for doing it. But once they learn how to practice and they know how to get better, I think that you've got a better chance of experiencing those students who will just absolutely choose not to. And my thing was, you know, I will say we had music 4 to 5 days a week. So I treated every class like the practice session. And if the student was not going to even touch their instrument after they went home, they were still going to get better because we were going to create a perfect practice session in a large group. So the more teachers give ownership over that learning to the students, and the more parents understand, and it's not a different language, how the brain works and how to the craft of playing an instrument, play it slowly. If you could recognize the tune while you're washing the dishes, they might be playing it too fast, you know? little things like that, anecdotal information. And then also the idea of a routine, you know, of a student just 10 minutes, a routine. If we do that, because I'll tell you right now, that it's not happening. I don't care what anybody says. It's not happening in our schools. We need to do that better. Then the chance of that intrinsic motivation happening, I mean, just it skyrockets.
So we set up the success and we set up the ownership. Give them opportunities.
Yes, I believe that. They need to, you need to sit down a student and ask them about practicing and how they need to be able to really kind of articulate that really well. Otherwise, they haven't, and again, you can't say that in a parent letter. You can't, that is modeled every day in the classroom.
So you talk about almost as if like you need to make the parent at home a music educator themselves.
I don't want them to be music educators at home because, again, I don't want to overwhelm them.
Okay.
So I can't tell you how many parents have always, I'm not musical. Now, again, that's not true. But, you know, I'll meet them where they're at. So what are the simple things that parents can do in order to help out at home? They can understand that there needs to be a small section of the home dedicated to music practice with a music stand, a pencil, and a chair. They need to understand that, you know, they can keep doing their things. They don't have to sit there and practice with the child, but they have to know what to expect from the school music teacher. So, you know, if math homework comes home. I always pick on math. I'm sorry. But and it's kind of confusing to the parent. A parent's going to email the math teacher and say, hey, you know, I was just wondering about this. This isn't the way we learn this or something like that. But a music teacher kind of has like a free ride a little bit because a lot of parents are like, but if they, you know, hey, what are you supposed to practice tonight? Oh, okay, you're supposed to do number four in the book, and then you're supposed to practice these four measures or these eight measures. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not speaking a different language. That's easy stuff.
Yeah.
Should a parent know how to put together an instrument and maintain it? Yeah, they should. They can, you know, fix different, you know, parts of their bathroom. They can do that, you know. I start there, you know, what's the easy stuff that's not going to overwhelm? And I've done this by talking to parents, and when I see their eyes glaze over, I know I've gone too far, you know. But you know, when we ask the question, when I go to, you know, educator conferences, I say, what are they not capable of understanding that we do, okay? Let's just get rid of those. Now, what are they capable of doing? Mm. Are they capable of, you know, knowing if something's being played too fast? Yes, if there are too many mistakes, if it doesn't quite sound right, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, we need to do a better job of giving parents ownership over that just a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, and not scaring them.
In one of your blog posts, the one where you talk about the first 2 months of being a music parent, you talk about the concept of developing grit. Can you explain what grit is?
My definition of grit is the wherewithal to overcome and battle through frustration and embrace failure. Mm-hmm. The ability to understand that failure is a part of learning, and that it doesn't mean you're incapable of doing something. It means that you just need to do it a little more. And really being able to embrace failure as a part of the learning process and overcome it. And also to delay that gratification. There are outliers who are just born that way, like we say, and you say, man, look at that. You know, they just want to, you know, do it. But it can be taught and it can be cultivated. Grit can be cultivated as long as, you know, here's where you are right now. Here's where you want to be. And if here's where you want to be is way over here, this space in between is that frustration. That's too much. So making sure that as a parent and teacher, that reach is not too far, that what they're working on and what a student, you know, is challenged with is just beyond their reach so that they can achieve some kind of success in some way, shape, or form, albeit little. If they learn that alone, that's worth more than any literature equation or anything else.
Sure.
You know, that's what I want them to do. And music really is the only subject, I believe, right now in our school system, in our high-stakes testing school system, where failure is okay. Mm-hmm. And that's where we can learn it, you know? Mm-hmm. And it can trade off into all the other subjects.
So, talking about intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation, do you use any extrinsic motivators to really motivate your students?
Well, I can shamefully say that I've used everything. You know, I mean, you know, I've done a lot. Yeah. And, you know, whether I believe in it or not, it's a really hard question to answer. But things work differently for everyone. I would say that if you're not moving towards a kid taking ownership over themselves and practicing because they want to be good and they want to be better, then you're barking up the wrong tree. But if once in a while, a reward or something like that, in order for them to get, you know, build that muscle of routine and then, you know, understand the value of it, you know, I'm okay with that. You know, whatever works. And again, like I said, there are some teachers where they have issues with certain things and gold stars is what's going to do it for them.
Yeah.
But as long as they're trying to develop themselves, you know, more, and as long as, quite frankly, there are musicians who are constantly trying to get better themselves. And that's another problem, you know. If you want, you know, students are a reflection of their teacher, right? So mm-hmm. you need to be modeling that behavior. When my kids came into class, they saw me, I was practicing. And if you're going to ask kids to practice, you better be doing it yourself, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. So that helps. Got to try everything, yeah. But don't marry yourself to it, because you need to vision of where you want them to be. Actually, you know, I'm reading this great book. It's How to Raise an Adult. It just came out, and you know, it talks about helicopter parents, and it talks about giving rewards just for doing certain things. And over time, you know, students, you don't want to raise a child, to an adult, who's only going to do things because something else is going to happen good. I mean, it's not even responsible.
When do you stop trying to motivate a student? Do you just, like, realize there's a certain point where this kid's just like, I'm not going to practice, I'm not going to do music anymore? Is there that point, and when, where is it?
Well, there are a bunch of ways to answer that question. First of all, to go back to being an educator, I made sure, again, that my band rehearsals, I didn't teach my class so that if you didn't go home and practice, you were not going to be part of the gang. Because I had so many inner city students who didn't have the wherewithal to do certain things. Mm-hmm. So basically, you know, I think it's really important for teachers to do their best to make sure that their ensemble and their school experience for their kids, they're successful whether they practice at home or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important, because there are late bloomers out there, you know, yeah. So we can't determine who, you know, if I look at kids in the sixth grade, I've decided who I thought was going to be successful, and most of the time I was wrong, right?
Yeah.
So there's that. So I don't know, having that in the back of their minds, of our minds. I would say that for the everyday parent out there, by the end of middle school, if a child decides that they don't want to do it anymore, if they really, really want to quit, they can quit. But I think that through middle school, I mean, look, I wanted to quit in the seventh grade. I ended up being a professional musician.
Yeah.
I mean, so there you have it. Yeah, the kids have to succeed despite themselves. So, you know, if we want to just kind of make a blanket statement, play through middle school 4 years. If the teaching has been good, if the parenting has been good,
yeah.
We can honestly say that a kid has made an informed, educated decision to, like, this is not for me.
Yeah.
You know, but we're a long way from that, you know, ideal world, right?
Yeah.
Well, like I say, in September, a reset button gets hit. All these kids are going to start instruments from scratch again all around our nation. And, like, we have a chance to retain them.
Right.
That's, you know, so... It's an exciting time.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like an exciting time down there, though.
Yeah, we weren't expecting this, I don't think. So.
Wow.
St. Louis
but
weather.
Thank you for having me, really.
Well,
thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, have a great summer.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This has been Strike Up the Band.
And Orchestra.
Motivating student musicians. If you'd like to listen to more of our podcasts, or would like information on this podcast, visit us at sutbpodcast.wordpress.com.